This is episode 31 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake.
Laura just told me I was a psychotic. That I belonged in a mental hospital. Like my dad. That was his diagnosis too. Psychotic. I saw him right before I came here. And he told me the voices were gone. That he was cured. And I asked him how. You know what he told me, Patty? He said he finally just did what they told him to do.
Kevin, stop!
Goodbye, Patty.
All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to The Leftovers on HBO. We're still here and so are you, so let's talk about a most powerful adversary. Suddenly I'm hidden. It's the darkness of the dawn. And your friends are gone. And your friends won't come. So show me where you fit. Hi everyone, I'm your host Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I wish you guys could see what I'm seeing right now.
I don't, and I'm really thankful that you can't. Wow.
Oh man, I had a whole line planned out and everything. I was gonna be funny as hell.
And then this happened.
And then just mid-sentence, something started to happen on our end that you guys aren't privy to see, and it made me laugh. And it may or may not have to do with my child, and it may or may not have to do with how my child eats. I'm just going to say that. We're just going to lay it out there.
Anyway.
It just kind of popped out all of a sudden. I don't know what the hell happened.
Yep. So Felicity is joining us, and in case you are new to The Living Reminders, we have a 5-month-old baby.
That's correct.
And you might hear her coo, and that's okay.
That's what happens.
Circle of life, man.
And, the reason why we are late in coming out with our episode is because our daughter Felicity, who is right now with my wife, has not been well. As a matter of fact, I think in the past, 3 or 4 days, we've had a total of about... 8 hours of sleep.
A whopping 8 hours total.
Yes. So we have been trying to get back in touch and in line with reality. And this podcast may be a shit show.
You know what? Based upon that episode, though, it's like so far out there and amazing and on crack. I think we're on the same line. And not being that it's going to be a shit show, it's going to just be a whole lot of, oh my God.
It's just going to be like, what are we doing here?
Well, let's talk about this episode.
All right, first. Well, what do you got for your Damon rating for this episode, my love?
How many Damons do I rate this?
Yep.
5.
Wow, there you go. 5 full Damons.
Mic drop.
Why are you giving it 5 full Damons?
It's perfect.
Yeah?
It's perfect.
Just perfect. Just the way that's the way that it is.
The only thing it missed was a little Matt Jameson.
I would agree. I would agree with
and
you.
A,
on that
and a
one.
Weird thing happening with Mary, but I think that is yet to come, as you often allude to.
Oh, it's
so
coming.
I know we're gonna have Matt, and I know we're gonna have Mary. It was freaking awesome.
Yep. My Damon rating, 4.9. I'm giving it 4.9 Damons. The only thing he's missing is an earlobe. That's what I'm gonna say, because this episode was very. Very nearly perfect. And the only reason why it wasn't is because it was only focused on Kevin, in which I love that, by the way. I love the fact that it was focused on Kevin and Patty and everything, all the above. But it did not include every storyline. It didn't wrap it up. Like, if this was, maybe the season finale of sorts, it would be tough because of that ending, but it may have been a perfect episode. But it didn't include every storyline the way that I wanted it to. And it was close. It was extremely close in how it did it. I think it was just missing Matt, because it brought in Lori, it brought in Tommy in a certain way. It brought in Nora, and it brought in everything with Kevin. It just, that's what we need to do. Very close, 4.9 Damons for me. And the listeners, you guys, Mike Cardenas on Facebook says 3.5 Damons for him. Lots of good reveals and tension, but come on. Does anyone really believe Kevin is dead? My money's on Lance and Vince Vega coming to the rescue Pulp Fiction style. And now it seems that season one Jill is back, the angsty Jill. Also, I was hoping for Kevin would be mildly interested in asking Lori why she abandoned her family. Wim says on Facebook, 5 Damons because I needed 5 very deep breaths after the show ended to not pass out. Ruth Hernandez on Facebook says, I'm effing terrified. This was such a mind F. Oh my God, how will I sleep tonight? 5 Damons. And Anita, my girl, Anita, how much I love you. You are fantastic. You say on Twitter, I refuse to acknowledge the limit of 5. I give it 10 Damons, as a matter of fact. So that was very close to being the tweet of the week, by the way. I thought that was just great. My love, are you ready to play Figure Out That Title?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Let's play Figure Out That Title.
So I'm going to leave it up to you, my love. You've got this down, Pat. You know every single week what these titles are all about.
I don't know about that.
You've become so much better this year than you were last season.
Oh, thank you.
This is basically your segment. I'm just going to leave it at that. Why don't you tell me what this title meant? And I will say too, by the way, before you get into it,
yep,
the titles have been much easier this season. So whether or not that is reflective on the titles or is reflective on you, I don't know quite yet.
Well, like Lens, it's kind of handed that.
But they've been much more easy to figure out, almost making this segment null and void. But my love, before I give you a backhanded compliment, please tell me what this episode title was all about.
Okay, so the title was A Most Powerful Adversary.
Correct.
And of course, Virgil talks about pretty much his adversary being whoever he fought.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dirty Santa had an adversary. And Kevin has a very powerful adversary, being that it is Miss Patty. But I think, actually, the most powerful adversary is death, or just the unknown.
Wow. Can you explain
and
a little bit?
And facing that. Well, this whole show is about, is it dead? Are they dead? Are they gone? Where is everyone? Where did they disappear to? What happens after you die, even?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Kevin is now going to face
that.
Whatever this is.
Correct. Wow. You have gotten deep. This is fantastic.
Totally another level.
So,
what do you think?
It's a little reference to what Virgil had told Kevin, that either someone, he has a guardian angel, someone that's watching him and protecting him, or he has a very most powerful adversary that is making sure that he is alive. And it's a reference to Patty making, and then in that, Kevin lived when the water drained out of the puddle, out of the little stream or river or pond or whatever it was, when the fissure opened up and the water disappeared. So it was an act of divine intervention, as Patty had said it. And Virgil was saying, listen, the only way you lived is because either someone was watching over you or someone was making sure that you are staying alive and they are your adversary so that they can battle you. And that is the literal application of a most powerful adversary. But you know what? I'm going to take it a step further. I think the most powerful adversary that Kevin has is himself. He is himself. He is going crazy. He's struggling with whether or not this is actually a psychotic break or there's some, you know, real magic going on here. And he has to figure out what it is. And this is the theme that you're finding for the rest through the rest of the season, but also the rest of this episode, which is, again, it's the real tangible evidence, something that Lori was suggesting to Kevin, or it's something magical, what Virgil was suggesting to Kevin. And either way, Kevin has to battle himself. And that is why I think his most powerful adversary is himself. And you know, I'm even going to go even further now, because I was actually inspired by this, inspired to have this thought process by the movie Creed that's coming out. In the trailer, Rocky is saying to, you know, spoiler alert, young Apollo Creed's son, you know, the most intimidating portion of who you can fight, the person that is like the your toughest opponent, is the person that's looking at the looking at you in the mirror, and it's yourself. And I started thinking about that in terms of Kevin, and I was like, wow, that is absolutely perfect. What a great comparison. And that is what I think this title is all about.
It's time to reheat the leftovers.
All right, my love. So before we get into this episode, I do want to say that normally we have two episodes a week. And since we're getting late on this episode, we are going to do everything kind of old school style and have all of our analysis, everything that we do, plus the listener feedback, all in this episode. So it may be relatively long. You've probably already seen that in the timing when you downloaded this. So just be prepared for it. There will not be a second episode this week, as much as I would want to do one. It's just going to be too crazy.
Or blame Felicity.
I'm going to totally gonna blame Felicity, too.
That's, sick baby. Poor thing.
All right, my love. Let's get into it. What do you got?
So you had a bad day. Yeah, Kevin had a bad day. Let's just fast forward to the very ending. What the fuck? I don't even want to recap this whole episode.
You know what?
What? Drink poison, and then Virgil's like, squirt your magic juice out, and I'm going to shoot my brains out.
You're not pulling punches today, I'll tell you that.
What?
You're not
hell?
Pulling any punches. You're getting right to the meat of the situation.
Let's do it, man.
All right, so, okay.
Is Kevin dead?
Okay, well, all right. As another further notice to the listener, Mary and I have not spoken about this episode at all.
It's been three long days.
Three long
10
days.
10-hour sleep fully days.
And all I asked her was, did you like the episode? And she said yes. And that was it. That's all we know. So this conversation we're having here is live. It is what it is. Is Kevin dead? I most certainly think that he is dead.
I think he is too right now.
I most certainly think that he is dead, but that does not mean he will remain dead.
No, we saw Michael in the trailer pull his legs. Maybe exactly. Michael has a magic juice.
Okay. You know, you keep talking about...
What is
about
that called? Epinephrine?
Epinephrine. Look at you.
Listen, that is a lot harder to say than magic juice.
Listen, don't say magic juice, because all I'm going to think about is when Patty told him what he had to fill up the wishing
Ew,
cup with.
Stop.
So I'm just saying that's what I'm going to leave it at. Is Kevin dead? Yes. I don't think he will remain dead. And I think that because, Mary, you put it best when you said Michael showed up at the end of the episode. And I must say, this show is more adept at handling all of these issues that we've been facing lately with television, such as rape and male nudity and killing off major characters, better than any other episode of television that I've seen so far from this past season, and in particular, Game of Thrones and The Walking Dead. The spoiler alert, there is a main character in The Walking Dead that apparently has passed away, that has died, and they have not acknowledged it whatsoever for the past 2 weeks. And they're mishandling it. And the same thing with another main character in Game of Thrones, spoiler alert, at the very last scene of the episode is a main character getting killed. And again, mishandled.
Kill him early or kill him not at all.
Or do what the leftovers did. Kill him. Fine. But don't intentionally leave it. Don't tease the watcher.
No,
and
they
I don't mean
are.
Tease like and I don't mean tease like a teaser at the end of a or like a cliffhanger. I don't mean that. Don't purposely piss or like don't poke the sleeping giant.
No, they totally are.
No,
poking.
No, no, they're not. No, they're not.
Because Michael is Erica's son, and Michael might have bird come back to life
no.
juice in his blood.
All right, so let me.
He's like Melisandre.
Let me go further into this, okay? Game of Thrones is making you think that Melisandre is going to help this character, okay?
We're not telling you who.
Okay,
but you know.
it's not showing you. It's not they just leave the character
you know nothing.
Dying. Yeah, okay. I'm just going to leave it. I'm not going to say anything. So yeah, yes, you know nothing at the end of the episode, and I'm going to leave it like that. The same thing with The Walking Dead. they intentionally shot the way this character dies in an ambiguous way to leave it out and leave it open for the viewer's interpretation. But they're not addressing it, right? At least what The Leftovers did was they killed Kevin, and now at the end, but what they could have done is they could have killed Kevin and then cut to black, but they didn't. They let you know that somebody else is there. And whatever may happen...
What do you mean they let you know someone else was there?
Michael shows up at the end.
That wasn't even at the end of the episode. If you're actually taking it by episode, that is
no, that's
preview.
The end of the episode. No, no, that's the end of the episode, honey.
I thought the end of the episode was Virgil blowing his brains out.
Yeah, well, that is the end. That's still part of the scene. But the very end is Michael coming in, opening the door, walking in, grabbing Kevin's legs, and starting to pull him out. And then it cuts to black.
Oh, see?
See?
I've had 10 hours of sleep.
So the show is not being disingenuous. It's at least telling you something is going to happen here.
How long can one be dead for?
Well,
until you can get shot with epinephrine.
There you go. Virgil tells Kevin that he's got 5 minutes. 5 minutos. That's what he's got before the brain starts to go crazy.
That was less than 5 minutes.
Of course it was less than 5 minutes.
That was
It was barely even a minute.
Yeah.
All right. So now there's a bunch of different theories here too, right? There's a bunch of... And I don't believe any of them. The first theory is... You know, Michael's going to take Kevin and he's going to bury Kevin in the miracle ground. And then 3 days later, he's going to wind back up alive, just like the birds were alive.
He's got the magic blood.
For Erica. Now, okay, here's a couple of problems with this theory. Okay, the first problem is when Erica was burying the birds, it was a bird that was barely alive. But Kevin, to our knowledge, is now dead. You saw him go limp. Is he in a comatose state? Perhaps. Maybe he's still kind of like a little bit alive. He's on his last legs. But I don't believe that necessarily. If it's gonna work as an overdose of heroin that Virgil suggested, that overdose of heroin. Sorry, Mary just bumped her head into the mic and it was really funny. That overdose of heroin is going to kill that person. Just like how heroin would kill somebody if they did an overdose. So it's not going to be like, oh, I'm just barely alive. Okay, great. So I do not believe that Michael is going to bury Kevin and everything's going to be fine. He's going to wake up and it's going to be like David Burton coming out of the cave in Australia, how they've referenced that earlier in the season.
What?
I don't think it's going to be like that. And I also don't believe this whole notion that Virgil just had like sugar water or just water in the... In the syringe anyway, so he wasn't gonna save Kevin no matter what. I don't believe that either. I'm going to leave my theory for the sudden theory of the week, and I will leave it there. I'm gonna let you sit with that. My theory, I think, is different from what most people have said out in the world. So I'm gonna leave it like that.
Oh, I think Virgil had to die to be his guide.
Yeah, that's another thing too. That's another thing that I don't believe, and I'll tell you why.
Why?
Just because you kill yourself doesn't mean you're gonna end up on the other side with Kevin. Right? It's not like there's a fucking waiting room of people just waiting to get in.
So why did Virgil kill himself?
Well, I'm gonna leave that to my sudden theory of the week.
I hate sudden theories of the week. You should just tell me
See,
now.
See, I'm not like you. I save my good stuff for the end.
Oh, well, I don't leave people waiting.
It's a professional tease.
Oh, God.
This is why we get Marconis.
Well, this is where I don't understand what your thoughts are.
This is why we're Oscar nominated.
Did Patty want him to do it?
Ooh, see now that, and that's one of the reasons why we played that first clip at the beginning of this episode. Did she
want
him to do it?
What an audible gulp, by the way. When you played that, I was like, God, he drinks like my husband eats, like very loudly. I can't
really
sit.
You're going
to
go
you
there?
You are a loud eater. I think it has something to do with like how cavernous your head is.
Mm-hmm.
Take that as, you know.
Thank you. That's quite nice of you. That's, you know? That's why we're married.
Yeah, like, I don't know. You just echo a lot. And I was just thinking, like, Kevin was a really loud drinker.
Of all the things you could have taken out of that, you get the fact that Kevin was a loud drinker.
No, just in the replay. Nonetheless.
Okay. Does Patty want Kevin to take the drink? My feeling on it is no, she does not want Kevin to
because
to
of take... that last the last outburst.
Correct. I feel like she's bluffing with Kevin. You know, she's saying, you know, I really, in the woods, she was saying, I really do want to do battle. I am so freaking ready to do battle with you. No problem. We're going to do this. And then she says to him, yes, I want you to do it. I want you to do it. And then just as he's about to do it, she says, stop. And before all of this, she says, whoa, 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 whoa. Let's relax here. Because this is a big step for us. And no matter what happens, Patty is inexorably connected to Kevin. No matter what. In the end, her existence is specifically connected to Kevin's existence. Now, what happens when Kevin goes away? What happens?
God. He kills the Horcrux!
Oh my god.
You're a wizard, Harry.
The little Patty will be at King's Cross in a blanket, and Dumbledore will say that was the little piece.
You're a wizard, Harry.
Never fails. It never, ever fails. If Kevin goes away, Patty goes away. And here's the thing. We all know that she doesn't know why she is there. All that she does know, and this is because she has said this, now how reliable of a narrator Patty is, you know, that in and of itself, that's questionable to begin with. And I'm willing to accept that because she did lie to Kevin. She did lie to Kevin about not telling, well, okay, she didn't tell him that he went to Virgil's the night that he slept walk, right? She's also not telling him that, hey, the key is behind me on the chair. She's intentionally withholding information. So is she a reliable narrator? I think not. I don't think so. But will she be around? Sorry, I'm thinking about this as we're going. She doesn't know everything. She's not an all-seeing, what's it called there? The thing in the Matrix. Oracle. She's not an oracle, but she does know certain things, right? And I'm not sure, and I'm not even sure if she really knows what's going on entirely, right? Because she's the one who says, I don't even know why I'm here. I died, I killed myself, and now I'm stuck with you. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if she really even gets it. So there's no way that she could be herself a narrable. Why can I never, ever, ever get that phrase right? In every episode I've said this, I've screwed it up. I can't even get it right now. A reliable narrator.
Oh yeah, wow. I don't even know where you were going with that.
I know. She's not. So it's hard to believe her. And here's the other thing, too. You can't even really believe Virgil either. Right? You can't believe him that he is necessarily telling the truth, because as Patty says, his big claim to fame is that he's a freaking pedophile. He's diddling little children, you know?
Wait, how do we know?
Because when he says to Kevin, I hurt John a long time ago and he hurt me back. So we now know that John tried to kill Virgil. And you can infer that Virgil was the one he tried to kill for which he went to prison, right?
Yes.
Then Virgil says to Kevin, he shot me in the nether regions, that area that,
yes,
you know, okay? So he shot him in the Frankenbeans, okay? We'll put it that way. So it's easy to infer, since Patty says he's a pedophile, again, reliable narrator type deal, that John was molested by Virgil in a way.
Hmm.
It's easy to get that. It's easy to take that leap. Now, whether or not whether or not it's confirmed, I don't know, but why would John shoot him in the man pots?
I was wondering if he thought he did something to Michael.
Valid point. And I'm not going to say he didn't do it, because he was saying, I hurt John a long time ago, like a long time ago, and he hurt me back. So we all know that John shot him, you know, 6 years ago. Is it possible that maybe he molested John and then tried to do something to Michael later on, and that's why John freaked the hell out and then shot him for it? I could see that. I could totally see that. That would make sense, right? And then it would also explain why Michael is going to see him, because Michael has forgiven him.
Man, this is like a whole nother level.
Now, I don't know if Michael has forgiven him for the things that he has done to... You know, I go back to that conversation that Michael had with Evie, with Erica, when he said, well, what's Dad going to do, shoot him again? Michael, if something happened with Michael, and I'm not saying anything happened now. I've seen these theories too that Virgil was trying to do something to Michael in the trailer right before Kevin showed up, and I don't buy that at all. I don't buy that 1 ounce. But I do believe that there is something that happened with Virgil, that either with John and maybe possibly Michael later on. And it makes sense because Erica says, Michael, if your dad sees you with him again, do you know what's going to happen? And he says, oh, he's going to do shoot him again. It would make sense that Michael wants to go to forgive him. John wants to forbid it. And Erica's like, whoa, all time out everybody.
Or maybe it was something that was misunderstood. Maybe actually he didn't do something terribly wrong to Michael, for example. Oh. But maybe John misunderstood it. Maybe it's part of this whole magic, deep thing that's going on. And I mean, heck, this guy says he was dead and then he fought his enemy and he came back to life. I mean, who knows? Maybe Michael and Evie and Erica have the same kind of magic thing that Virgil has, and John just can't understand it because he doesn't believe in magic or miracles or any of that kind of stuff. And he saw something. Maybe they did something and he misinterpreted it.
Sure,
maybe they were nude. I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, and that would possibly lead to the reason why John doesn't trust anything about Miracle whatsoever. Because when he sees Miracle, he sees the charlatans, the people that are selling a lie and the people are buying it. Maybe he associates all of that. He associates going to prison. He associates the thing that happened to probably himself and what he thinks is happening with Michael. And he associates all of that with Virgil, right?
Yes.
I think that is probably the reason why he can't have any of it. I've also seen a couple of theories that Michael told John that Kevin went to go see Virgil, right?
Okay.
And then John found out through the palm print that
Kevin's the one.
Kevin was the one. And so John off screen went to Virgil and said, hey, I will forgive you if you kill Kevin.
Whoa. You and these theories, you're so funny because you get to like hear these things. I am in no man land. All I hear is, mama, mac and cheese, mama.
See, so. I don't buy that either. I don't buy that either because if you know to all high hell that if John found out it was Kevin, there is no way he is going to allow anybody else to handle Kevin,
exactly.
Except himself.
He would quarter him, pull out his entrails.
Yeah.
I mean, he would be torturing this guy, not letting him die an easy death, quote unquote, of poison.
Correct.
Nope.
It'd be like Hannibal Lecter on this guy. It would be everywhere. It would be a mess.
Yes.
So there's no way he's going to allow Virgil to go kill this guy. And, you know, he's not scared of getting caught by the cops because he basically runs the cops.
Mm-hmm.
He basically runs the Rangers. We all know that. We've all seen it. The guy's burning freaking people's houses down and nothing happens to him. He gets shot and nothing happens to him.
He's invincible.
He really is invincible within the town of Miracle because
yes.
Everybody's afraid. So there's no way he's not doing anything because he's afraid he's going to get caught. Not going to happen. No chance.
Can we talk about everyone's favorite relationship that has gone awry? Kevin and Nora. Okay,
right,
so everyone was like...
Give me your thoughts.
All right, everyone's been like, Nora's the best girlfriend. Nora, no, she's not. No, she's not. And here you go, okay?
Okay,
No, Nora was the one that said, let's lay it all out. Let's be honest. And granted, it took Kevin a little while to be honest, but he was the one who was honest.
Okay.
It wasn't like someone else told Nora about Patty. It took him a while. He thought he was going crazy. Mm-hmm. He didn't know what was going on. And he finally was like, you know what? I do need to tell Nora. He tells Nora, and instead of Nora being cool, okay, Nora, you pretty much had sex with a doll. All right. Who are you to judge? Who are you to judge? Seriously. You have your own kind of crazy honey badger.
Back in season one, by the way. Just so everyone's clear. It didn't happen this season.
But like, what? Why is that what pushes her over the edge? Why does she keep him handcuffed to the bed? I mean, granted, yeah, the key was under the pillow, but whatever. Like, why doesn't she answer his phone calls? Here he is. On the edge of a psychotic break, mm-hmm. or he is seeing Patty, whatever it is, he needs Nora, and she leaves.
Okay. Here's an idea that I'm buying into a little bit. If I had to sell it, if I had to buy it, I would. Nora does all of this after she finds out about the lens theory. Perhaps she thinks, I'm putting Kevin through all of this because I'm a lens. He is seeing these things. Remember, he says to her, I didn't see Patty until after Lily showed up.
Yeah, and basically when they started living together.
When they started living together, that's when Patty showed up. So she hears all these lens things. She is scared. She has the conversation with Erica.
And yet she keeps Lily and Mary? No. No.
No, but here's the thing. I'm not talking about departure. Even though Lens does refer to the departure, what I'm thinking is she probably thinks, I am the reason why Kevin is seeing Patty. There is some bad juju around me, man. There's some bad
friggin'. Then why blame it on him? Because she said, you know, you've been seeing a dead woman. Like, she's acting pissed at him. And if it is her own guilt, then why is she speaking like that to him? I don't think so. I think Nora is just being a powder, and she's not playing by the rules that she set down of be cool with no matter what. Yeah. It's going to be okay. You're on the Nora train, and I'm saying Nora ain't perfect.
I'm looking at Nora through rose-colored glasses.
You are.
I really am. I'm not going to lie. Maybe it's because I have a severe crush on Carrie Coon.
Once again, relationships brought about through stressful situations.
It's the speed theorem.
Yes.
It never worked. I don't know. Yes, perhaps I am looking at it through rose-colored glasses. Maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid.
And why can't Kevin find them? I'm like, I really think she just went to Matt's house.
Yeah, here we go. Where the hell is she?
I think she's just at Matt's house next to the church.
Yeah, because there is stuff there. Yeah, all Mary's stuff is there. That would make sense.
What, is she going to pack up all of Mary's stuff? What about her blender? Where's her blender? She can't be, like, camping. Whose house did she go to? She's not going to go to Erica's. Erica just threw a rock through her window. She doesn't know anybody else. I think she's just next to the church. Kevin is a bad cop.
Use your deductive skills, bro.
My girlfriend's sister-in-law is severely handicapped and needs special items, including a ninja blender.
I was just gonna ask you if you thought it was a ninja.
I don't know.
You
I don't
stole
know.
The words right
I use
out of
a Blendtec. Blendtec would be my best, but yeah, best guess.
I'm so glad we're married because you literally stole the words right out of my mouth.
So I was disappointed with that. I'm disappointed with Nora being a little powder. You know, I'm disappointed in Kevin not just going to Matt's house. Both of them. Fools.
Yeah, but okay, here's the thing. Is he going to go to Matt? Because he's running around like a chicken with his head cut off, right?
Yes.
He's trying to get the thing cut off of his wrist, right? He goes to the locksmith. By the way, what a great scene with Patty saying, oh, you know, it's just a fucking duck.
Oh,
it's a
gosh.
Fucking duck. And Kevin turns around and tells the kid to shut the fuck up, even though he didn't mean it for the kid. It was mm-hmm. for Patty. The face he gives was phenomenal. Justin Theroux owned every second of this episode.
Yes, he did.
It was his best work since the finale. And, you know, I've never really been sold on Theroux. This season, he's been getting better for me. The problem is I know him as Parks and Rec Theroux. You know what I mean? When he was in Parks and Rec, and he played the guy that knew everything and knew everybody. Mm-hmm. Remember his appearance?
Yes, yeah.
I know him as that. I know him in Tropical Thunder. I know him as the comedy writer. And to believe him as this character with this kind of angst and this kind of like brooding, it's hard. But this season has gotten better, and it culminated in this episode. So we're back at the locksmith's office, right? Or the locksmith's store. And then Kevin is going to Virgil's. And then he's running off and talking to Patty in the woods. And then he's going to the house and he's talking with Lori, which, by the way, what a scene. Then he brings Lori into the house. Then he gets the phone call from Nora. Then he has to go back to Virgil's, and then he dies. So with that said, I mean, the guy's running around like a chicken with his head cut off. When does he have actually time to go to Matt's house?
Okay. Well, I just thought that the church was nearby. Okay. I thought he could have swung along the way to go to the locksmith. Who knows? Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Can we talk? Okay, so yeah. All right. I get it. I'll give him a break.
Thank you.
Nora, you're a bad girlfriend.
I'm not going to go there.
I'm saying it.
I'm not going to co-sign on that because... She's done so much, but I will say I was disappointed that she left. However, again, I'm not being a ball washer here for Justin Theroux. But what I am being is the conversation that he had with Nora was so freaking desperate.
Yes.
Oh.
And then she left.
God. Well, no. She was already gone. Remember the conversation he had?
Oh,
she had
on the phone.
On the phone.
Yes.
He's like, Will you come back if I get rid of it? And again, and I've said this before, when you're married, and I know that these guys aren't married, but you can basically just assume that they are or should be.
When you're in a deep relationship, just say that.
Okay, when you're in a deep relationship, you'll do anything. And this is the issue that I have with Kevin. Well, not the issue, but this is the issue that Kevin has. He right now is in a situation where it's a no-win situation, right? He has to do whatever he can because he doesn't want to lose his family. He's already lost one family, and Jill already referred to this by saying, Dad, this is twice now.
No, she's also saying when they first moved in the house and he effed up and she's like, you need to fix this. I think that's what she was referring to.
See, I took it differently. I took it as though we had a family and it got fucked up. We lost our family. We finally got one back now. Let's not fuck this up. But I agree with you. I can see what you're saying. So he's losing his family. He's losing Nora. He's losing the love of his life. His relationship with Jill, even though it was already tenuous to begin with, it's even falling apart even further now. It's gone back to the way they were in season one with like angsty Jill and her blaming everything on him, which is it's hard for her not to do because, again, now she's lost this mother figure. And she's taking out all the grief and all the problems on her father. So he's got that going on. And then he's got Lori, who has come to Miracle, by the way, to find out where Tommy is. And she tells him, Kevin, you're just like your dad. You're just like your dad. You're having a psychotic break. Patty ain't there. Wow. I don't think Felicity likes Lori that much.
I loved that session. Oh. I loved that little makeshift therapy session.
Unbelievable.
It's perfect. It, smoking cigs.
Yeah, just ripping butts. Okay. I will
say. There's just so much to cover in this episode. It's like every single little thing. The only thing I don't care about is Jill. Jill became angsty. Why won't you fuck me? Really?
Role reversal, though. Usually it's the girl that says, I don't want you because I don't love you. But it's Michael saying, I don't love you. Which, by the way, I don't think I would say that to a girl. Like, if you're, you know, we can mess around.
No, he said, I don't know you that well enough yet.
I know, but, like, just to say, I don't know if I love you. I feel like that's kind of heartbreaking. I don't know. Role reversal for those two, which is really cool. I like that. But for Lori, it makes you remember how great of an actress Amy Brenneman really is. Like, she was great in season one, and to see her not talk but to emote through her face was fantastic. But when she's finally able to talk and talk with Kevin in a way that you always wanted her to chat with Kevin in that manner, it was great to have her finally speak to him the way that she did. She's going back to her roots of being a psychologist or a psychiatrist. And again, it's going back to this root of magic versus realism. Kevin is the one that's saying this ghost is with me, and Laurie is the one saying, as she's going back to the way she was. No, it's not real. This isn't real. There's a real reason for this. There's a reason why you know about the Neil story and the bag of shit, because I told you. If you listened more, maybe we wouldn't be in this problem.
Loved that.
Remember she made that joke? I was like, oh, dig.
I do that sometimes.
Sometimes. So she has this line, and she's not wrong. And what the show does is great, because it provides just that little amount of doubt on both sides, right? It tells you one thing. You're like, oh my God, that is the answer. Patty is a ghost. And then Lori comes along and says, no, you're having a psychotic break. And then you're like, yeah, but that makes sense too. Son of a... Like, they're not being clear. And it's allowing
you... His dad is what throws me for a loop. Kevin Sr. Like, even though Lori said your dad had it, oftentimes it's family related. So I'm excited if Jill starts to hear someone. It's... His dad seemed to get clarity. Mm-hmm. And his dad... Like, his dad seemed to know a lot of stuff last season.
Correct.
And now his dad's okay, and he said it's because he listened. So, I don't know. Does his dad have bad adversary ghosts, or are there good ghosts and bad ghosts?
That's possible.
I wish his dad said who his voices were.
Yeah, that would help clarify.
Oh my God, if it was like Abe Lincoln, you know, like smart people. You know?
Abe Lincoln.
Albert Einstein.
And wouldn't that suck too if your father had Abe Lincoln and you got stuck with Patty?
Oh my God, not fair. Not fair.
That would suck ass. It's just talk about living in your father's shadow even more. So it's a no-win thing for Kevin, because now he has Lori telling him this is a psychotic break. Then he has Virgil saying this is like a this thing is clinging to you, like what's that stuff that we use, the cling wrap, what's it called?
Press and seal.
Press and seal. Okay, Patty is sticking to you like press and seal, like on so food don't go bad. And Kevin, because I think he leans towards the whole magic side of this right now, he's believing Virgil. Because it's the easiest answer for him.
No, it's because it's the right answer. There is magic or something unknown. That bird flew, okay? And Virgil knew that Kevin had Patty with him. He did. He didn't just go up to everyone and say, like, I can help you with your problem. Like, he knew there's somebody walking around with you. There's okay. some person, there's some being with you. So Lori's wrong. Lori is wrong. Dead birds fly.
All right. So you're going. That's it. You have.
I am on the magic train. Right, the Hogwarts Express. That's where I am.
If I had the sound queued up, I'd play it right now. And of course, I don't because I'm a mess. So your line is in the sand here.
Yes, okay. The line is in the sand, and I'm on Team Magic. Patty is real in some way, shape, or form. That dead bird flew.
Yes, we've said all season that there has been this psychic energy, that there has been this kind of magical ability. Finally, I got the sound pulled up. Ready?
You're a wizard, Harry.
There you go.
Boom.
We've talked about that all season, so I can't deny it. But there's enough reasonable doubt to say... Maybe there is a logical explanation for this.
Well, it's the whole theory of belief. You can't see it.
Yeah, and again, to belabor the point, we've talked all season about ascribing meaning. Everyone is saying, if you did just one thing, if you did this, perhaps your life would be different. And maybe we're just putting meaning to this thing. And I don't know. You know, I will say, listener, Leslie Williams Bosnick, and if I'm ruining your last name, I'm sorry, or Bosnack, she gave us an article on Facebook about Patty, and it was from Variety. And one of the questions that was asked of Ann Dowd was, Lori had amounts to what is an intervention with Kevin, where she told him Patty was just a figment of his imagination. And they wanted to know what Ann's take on that was. And Ann Dowd says, who plays Patty, obviously, she says, it reminds me of the relationship that Patty had with Lori. Lori sees the world in the same way she's always seen the world, meaning it can't be something other. There has to be an explanation if he's seeing the presence of and knowing someone is with him. That's a very accepted way of understanding it. You're having a breakdown. You need to get help. This cannot be anything other than you just losing it. But the world is bigger than that. And Patty's presence in his life is bigger than that and cannot be explained by saying, you're having a breakdown. That's like telling Patty the reason you're having all this anxiety is you haven't dealt with your terrible husband. No, it wasn't. She knew that something huge was about to happen. And in fact, she did. So that too, granted, this is coming from Ann Dowd, who's playing Patty, so she's probably eschewing her answer a little bit to favor Patty, but regardless, she's saying that there's something bigger happening here than all of the things that are happening within Kevin's life. It's not just you're going crazy. It's not just that answer. It is everything else on top of that. And it's, I know you've drawn your line in the sand, by the way.
You're a wizard, Harry.
But it's easy to believe her when she says that. Again, like this show, it does that to you. You hear one thing, you're like, this is it. And then you hear another thing, you're like, oh, no, that's it. And then, what the hell do you want to believe?
Miracle. That's what I want to believe.
But Kevin has this no-win situation, right? Because either he's crazy and his life is falling apart. He's tearing his family apart.
I would still agree with all of that.
And he's tearing he's becoming his dad because he's crazy. Or he's got this dark passenger. I'm sorry, I'm stealing a term from Dexter. He has this dark passenger with him in Patty that's forcing him to do things.
It's both. She is driving him crazy.
Exactly. So this is the thing. I think Kevin is more willing to accept the fact that he has this supernatural thing happening to him because supernatural things are happening around him. And either he goes to see Virgil, right? And
she found his phone. Patty found his phone.
Yes,
Patty
she did.
Is real.
But again, the argument could be made that his subconscious knew where his phone was. It's just that he didn't know where his phone was. And Patty is part of his subconscious. Because Kevin did, in fact, lose the phone. He would know where the phone is. It's just that he is telling himself that she knows where the phone is because he doesn't. But in fact, he could know where it is because he lost it. Right? And the fact that Lori was saying to Kevin, listen, Patty ain't around because she knows I would have to ask you a question that only she and I would know the answer to, and she wouldn't be able to give you that answer.
He didn't ask.
I know he didn't
ask. I was so mad. I was ready because he said that. He said, Lori said you're not real, and I wanted to be like, all right, Patty, say something.
Correct.
Tell her something, Patty.
Oh, tell him something. Yeah, yeah.
And she didn't.
And she didn't want to do it. So
that's the one thing that held me up.
So that's what I'm saying, right?
Where did he drive to in the woods? Where did you think he went?
Oh, I don't know.
Because at first I was like, oh, he went to where he killed her. And then I was like, wait a second.
Yeah, that's
Texas
up in New York.
And New York are very far away.
That's what I thought, too. I thought he was going to have to go to New York to see her or go back to where it all began for them, right? Go back up to Cairo. Oh, which, by the way, when Patty references Cairo, Egypt, and the chalice, the wishing cup from King Tut's tomb.
Don't even go there. Gross, Patty. Potty mouth.
I felt like it was Damon Lindelof just messing with all of us, being like, hey, we laid all this groundwork for Cairo down last year, and I know you're all trained like to listen to every single thing that I say. So, hey, let me screw with you a little bit and tell you that you have to drink some semen.
So gross.
Because I bought in. I'm like, he's got to go to Cairo? Well, how the hell is he going to do that? How the hell is he going to break all this security? What's he going to do with the cup when it happens? What do I do? I completely bought in. Totally bought into that. Wow. So I thought it was funny. Sorry, you know, my microphone has fallen off of its little stand here.
Let's pause you. We need to talk about Lori now being in the house with Jill. That's going to be really interesting, especially if Kevin is dead or some form of dead and doesn't come back.
Correct.
That is now who lives in this $3 million house, is Jill and Lori.
And now she's got to figure out what she's going to do with Lori, because now she is now stuck with her mother. Kevin's gone.
But at least together, they're both going to try to find Tommy. Like, that's the one thing both of them actually care about. So, at least, you know, it's not even like, I wanted Lori to say, Jill, where's Tommy? And she didn't. So obviously that's going to come in the next episode when he's driving in the car with Meg.
Correct. But will they also focus on where's Kevin? Because Jill sees Kevin drive off. And not drive off like, oh, dum-de-dum. The guy speeds the hell off.
She thinks her dad's crazy right now, and Lori does too.
Yeah, but
so.
But I feel like they're going to be like, hey, where'd dad go? You know?
Oh, yeah, they're going to be concerned.
And then here's another thing on top of it. Jill and Jill and Michael have this relationship now. Michael's seen her dad fucking die, and he knows where the body is. What is Michael going to say now? How does he handle that? No one's talking about this. No one's talking about the fact that Michael now has to confront Jill about this.
Well, Michael already knew. That whole scene in the church, Michael already had the knowledge that her dad went to go see Virgil, all this stuff.
Correct.
Because then when she's like, oh, my dad hears voices, he was like, wow.
Oh, no, but he didn't know again. He didn't know that he slept walk, though.
No, okay. But whatever.
But he knew that he was there.
He already knew stuff about Jill's dad and was keeping that secret. Okay. So Michael knows how to keep a secret.
And here's the thing too. We all know that Michael was at the trailer with Virgil. Something was going on there. So Michael was fully aware, I think, of Virgil's plan.
Oh, completely.
And he had that look of like resignation, like, oh man, this is fucking bad news, dude. This is not gonna be good. But he says, God be with you, and then they continue on with the rest of their day. Which, okay, I'm going to leave this for my sudden theory of the week, so I won't say anything. One thing I did want to point out, this episode was directed by Mimi Leader.
Love
and
her.
We all know Mimi Leader. If you want to go back and listen to our interview with her, I think it's episode like 12 or 13-ish. She is just a gift to this show, and she is like a powerhouse woman director, and I want to say that too, because the only other woman, there are a few women directors in the world that are powerhouses, like Michelle McLaren, who did an episode of The Leftovers last year, Anna Forster, who did a few episodes of Outlander, who's now taking on the vampire movie there with Kate Beckinsale, and Mimi Leader. These guys, they get it. And one of the scenes that I really wanted to point out was when Patty was standing opposite or parallel to Kevin in mm-hmm. the woods.
Yeah.
And it was a subtle thing, but when I saw it again, I was blown away by it. They're standing so far apart, they're talking, and Kevin starts walking, and you anticipate Kevin to, like there are a bunch of trees in the middle of them, and Kevin starts walking towards Patty, and you anticipate Kevin to be walking in front of the trees, and he's not. He's walking in between them. And your view is partially blocked of him as he's walking towards it. It was like a very cool optical illusion, and what a beautiful set of circumstances. Here's the thing too, they show Patty hit Kevin. They show her push him multiple times, but they don't show her actually making physical contact with him. Like you see him get hit in the face, but it was kind of obscured, and then she pushes him again. It's only focused on him. So it does make you wonder, is she really there? Of course, we all know the Fight Club sequence when, you know, Edward Norton's kicking the shit out of himself. So maybe that's the same thing that's happening with Kevin. And God, I love this show. I don't think I've been engaged with a show like this since Lost.
And look at the correlation.
We have to go back, Kate.
I really don't, and I didn't mean to do that, by the way. But I didn't mean to compare it to Lost. But I really haven't been engaged with a show since Lost, and this relationship with Kevin and Patty has been fantastic. And part of that article that I read too, one of the questions for Ann Dowd was, you know, Patty was pretty mean to Kevin. She lies to him. She hides the handcuff key from him. What do you make of that? And Ann Dowd says, keeping him off balance regulates Kevin in some way. I don't think she can help it. She knew where the key was. She saw it on the chair, and of course she did. She wants to be in control as much as she can. Part of that is about unnerving him. When he's sure of himself and clocking her, that's unnerving to her. She's more comfortable with him off kilter. When she does that, it's a way of saying, you're not in charge here. Don't think you are for a minute. I remember asking Damon Lindelof, the showrunner, does she want the relationship to work out with Kevin and Nora? And Damon said, she doesn't even believe in relationships. And I thought, wow, that's right. She doesn't have any history of any successful relationships. It's just about trying to keep herself in a place where she can function. If that means throwing him off, that's what she's going to do to stay in charge as much as she can. And that, in my opinion, is why she tells Kevin, no, stop. Don't drink this stuff. Kevin, no, don't get in the car. Kevin, no, don't go to see John. This is all bad news. Because she knows if he starts doing these things without her, she no longer has this control over him. Especially if he tries to get rid of her. And she's bluffing the entire time. Yeah, I'm ready to do battle. I'm ready to do it. And she's thinking, I'm telling him all this and he's going to back down because he doesn't want to do it. He's got too much to lose. Like he tells Virgil, I got a family. I got a girlfriend. I got kids. And I don't want to die. And then, of course, Patty says, maybe Jill would be better off. And she's thinking reverse psychology. Maybe if I keep telling him this, it'll go away. And then she doesn't see the wild card. And this is a case for your magic Harry Potter theory.
You're a wizard, Harry.
She doesn't know about the conversation with his dad. She doesn't know that the dad started listening to the voices. And Kevin fibbed a little bit. He said the voices went away for his dad. And his dad didn't say that. His dad said, oh, yeah, they're still there. But I just started listening.
What do you mean that Patty didn't hear about that conversation? Patty wasn't with him then.
I know. But if she was part of his subconscious.
Oh, yeah.
Then she would know about the conversation.
It's because she's magic.
It's because she's freaking Harry Potter.
She's real.
So with that said, that's a case for you. All right. And I'm willing to go along with that. And what she didn't expect was Kevin to say, do you want me to do this? And you see her face. She's shocked. Like, what do I do? And then it runs into the clip that we played at the beginning of this episode where he says, my dad said I started listening. They went away. And then she realizes, shit, I've lost him. Kevin, stop. And then it's too late. So now she's in flux. Do you think they're going to show Kevin and Patty battling out in the nether worlds?
I don't know, but I don't think this is the end of Patty. So there'll be more battling. I just don't know where it will be.
I agree. And I don't think they're going to show it because it wouldn't fit in the narrative of the show. Like, I feel like Kevin will come out of it thinking, oh my God, I did it. Because you don't need to see that. Like, what are they going to do? Showing them battle with swords or fighting or whatever? It could, you know, actually what I thought of when, we've already discussed it again, but it's Harry Potter going into King's Cross.
You're a wizard, Harry.
And seeing the little baby Voldemort and whatever, spoiler alert. You could see something like that. I get it. But if somebody could do it, it'd be the show The Leftovers because it's bonkers. But I don't think they're going to do it. I think Kevin is going to wake up somehow, some way, and that'll be that. And he'll think, oh my God, I did it. But maybe when he wakes up, the first thing he sees is Patty. Oh my God, I would lose my shit if that happened.
And she looks over and say, funny seeing you here.
I know, or like, nice try, or again, what the fuck was that? like she said after he got caught by the cops. Oh, for that to come back again, I would die. I would die. I would think that would be freaking awesome. That would be great. All right, my love, since this is an old school episode, are you ready to get into the listener feedback?
Yes.
Let's do it. All right, so the first email was from Gloria. She says, I just listened to your feedback episode for Lens, and Blake, you mentioned that they were looking, you were looking for a signature moment in The Leftovers so far. So what did you think of the final moments in Sunday's episode of Most Powerful Adversary? I thought that was a signature moment. What do you think? And I'll tell you, Gloria, that, you know, it's on the way to being a signature moment. I don't see it there quite yet. I do feel like a little bit of a jackass for saying that last episode, because this is on the way to being that. But it's there hasn't been a resolution for it yet. And when I was talking about the signature moments, I meant like it was something that was quotable. It was like it was final. It was there was no ambiguity to it. It was just, that's what it was. It was, we have to go back, Kate. It was, I'm the one who knocks. It was a firm stand, like a sign in the ground, a post right there. Boom. This is what this is. And I'm not sure this is there quite yet. I think what will happen after this will be the signature moment. From Greg W., he says, Virgil is the grandfather of Evie and is into some magic of his own, in quotations. Inside of this trailer, we see numerous elixirs and potions, which he used to create as a poisonous cocktail to give to Kevin. Virgil also said he could feel the presence of Patty, like the plastic they put over a plate of food so it won't go bad. I believe Evie was very close to Virgil, much like Michael. Instead of following the path of God like Michael, Evie followed witchcraft like her grandfather. Also, remember, Evie's great-grandmother used to speak about burying birds and making wishes as well. So, things to notice. Number one, Virgil could have a sense of Patty clinging to Kevin when Kevin came into town and seemed to notice her in Kevin's truck when he invited Kevin inside of the trailer. Why didn't he notice Patty's presence inside the trailer at the end of the episode? Ooh, very valid point. In a previous episode, Virgil also seemed to have this presence surrounding Nora as well. Does Nora have something clinging to her as well, aka Asriel? No, I'm not going there, Greg. I'm sorry. Number two, Virgil said that John shot him in the chest, belly, and the foul machinery below the waist, which transgressed the laws of man. I believe Virgil molested Erica, and John shot him for doing so. This is why Erica will never forgive Virgil. Although, number three, Virgil was also seen making Kevin lemonade. When life hands you lemons, you make lemonade. Wow. Excellent, excellent, excellent thought. In this scenario, Kevin is taking advantage of Virgil's advice on how to vanquish his adversary. And number four, Virgil said that Kevin needed a guide when he died to face his adversary. Virgil was also the name of the guide in Dante's Inferno that guided Dante through purgatory and hell, which we
did. I said booby trap.
We did mention. I still haven't come up with a sound for that. Damn it. We did mention that in episode two when we found out that Virgil's name was in fact Virgil, and I went all history geek on everybody. But excellent, excellent, excellent point. I don't think, however, though, that Virgil is going to be the guide for Kevin. The guy blew his brains out. And just because... we've already talked about it, so I'm just going to leave it at that.
On Facebook, Tamika Jackson says, wait, so in order to be a guide, you have to kill yourself or die too? Then why empty the syringe? Why not explain the process truthfully? I, too, am confused by the syringe emptying.
Okay. All right, this is what I'm going to say. It's partly getting into my sudden theory of the week. All right? The syringe either was there and it was full of epinephrine, or it wasn't even epinephrine at all. It was just water or sugar water or saline or whatever. Either way, he needed... It was a dramatic moment, number one. But either way, he didn't want the epinephrine to be used to save him, to save Kevin. Or it didn't matter anyway. It was just a prop. So whatever, screw it. We'll throw it out.
Steph Wanamaker put on Facebook, I think it's interesting how good of a dad Kevin was when he said to Virgil, I can't kill myself temporarily because I have a daughter. But then he realized, get this, with Lori visiting Jill, she now has one parent around. Is it too bad that it's a parent that she can't stand? So this is a really cool point that Steph brought up, that Kevin was nervous about leaving, you know, when he was given the choice, hey, let's die and you can get rid of Patty. But he went, and then he also found Lori, and hey, Lori, why don't you come on home with me? And Jill's there. So now Jill won't be left alone. So just in case Kevin doesn't come back, Jill still has a parent. That's really cool.
That is a very cool observation. That's not something I had thought about, but excellent, excellent point. On Twitter, what do we got, kiddo?
Dave Smith tweets, I wonder why Virgil has so many lights in the house. Was Michael a part of Virgil's plan to trick Kevin?
What do you think?
The lights look really cool, and I think trailers are really dark, so they figured out a really cool way to make a trailer look good. And Michael was totally a part of Virgil's plan. Michael is pulling Kevin's dead body out of the trailer, and Michael totally knew.
Yep, I'm gonna leave my reservations, again, leave my theories for the Sudden Theory League, although I did read one really cool thing. Virgil has a bunch of lights in his trailer and outside of the trailer, so that if he has to do what he has to do again, meaning like go to the other side, the light in his trailer will guide him back to where he needs to be.
Cute. And then on Instagram, Hanlanam, I don't really know, but Hanlanam, I think, said, does anyone else think that Michael also has his own adversary? Because when he says to Jill that he also takes time to talk to someone, maybe he wasn't talking about God. Maybe he actually has the same affliction that Kevin and his grandfather have. It does seem to be hereditary between Kevin and Kevin Sr.
Sure.
So
maybe it's the grandfather.
What if Michael? Yeah, Michael has his own.
Yeah, Michael did say he talks to people that are not there, which, again, is that a slight on God and religion? Or does Michael actually have his own adversary?
We were supposed to take it as God.
I think it's just, but it would make sense if Michael does have his own adversary, because that is the reason why he'd be going to see Virgil. That would make sense. I think it's time for the voicemails. You ready, kiddo?
Hey, Mary and Blake, it's Suzanne Carew. Hope you guys are doing well. That was definitely a Five Damon episode. I don't know what the bleepity bleep happened on Sunday, but I gotta tell you, I blame you, Blake. I do. I really do. I'm sorry. The reason is that, you know, you've been saying the last couple episodes that the show has not had its signature moment, you know, the one that makes you go, wah, and changes the fabric of the show. I think you got it. You killed Kevin. You killed Kevin. And you should feel bad about that. I can only hope that there are miracles in Miracle and that he will come back, because that is just bizarre. And it'll be interesting to see how this all unfolds with the plot line, because Michael, definitely a bell went off in his head as soon as he heard that Kevin was a sleepwalker. And right after that gunshot, he was close by. He walked right in and, not for nothing, did not seem surprised to see his grandfather's brains splattered on the wall. And sprang into action with Kevin. So there was definitely something planned there, in my opinion. So, I don't know, it's going to be pretty interesting. But you killed Kevin, Blake. You killed him, okay? Like, pick another character, you know what I mean? All right, guys, talk soon.
You know, I got to say, Susan, God, did I kill Kevin? I don't know. I don't know if I killed Kevin. Maybe I did. Perhaps. I'm willing to go along to get along there. In fact, I will defend myself. I actually tried to kill Nora first. One of my first sudden theories of the week was that Nora was going to die. So please forgive me for killing Kevin. I don't want to kill him. Great thought though, and great notice that Michael did not really seem all shocked that Kevin was dead, or that Virgil was dead, by the way. So this is going to play into my sudden theory, and I think Michael played a larger part in this than we all think that he did. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you so much for calling in.
Hey, Mary and Blake. This is Clint Church from Texas. Just wanted to call in and talk about this episode from this past week. What powerful television. It's simply brilliant. I'm done telling people how great this show is. I'm tired of hearing people wanting answers, and there's this constant criticism and no answers, and Lindelof just never gives all those answers. Those people can go back to watching Dancing with the Stars and Criminal Minds. As a whole, this show is becoming the best television I've ever watched. A couple of thoughts. Maybe Virgil is leading Kevin into battle because he realizes that maybe Patty clings closer than he once thought. Maybe that's why he didn't use that EpiPen, or maybe that was the plan all along. I'm not sure. I just love that there's more questions. It's great. I think that Virgil didn't expect Patty to be able to get into his trailer. He's been weird about how many people are in his trailer at once, the three is a crowd kind of thing. I also believe Kevin is going to come back. Lindelof leaves clues to this. The mason jar didn't break when he dropped it on the ground. It's kind of subtle, but the combination of that, Virgil's name being Virgil, as Blake mentioned, the allusion to Dante's Inferno, as well as the success story of Dirty Santa on the tower, leads me to believe that Kevin isn't dead just yet. Speaking of Dirty Santa, Dirty Santa writes to David Burton, who we assume is the dude in Australia who said he came back from the dead, right? Could David Burton be Holy Wayne? We never saw what happened to Wayne's body. Could he have resurrected and moved his operation to Australia? How is he connected to Dirty Santa? Was Holy Wayne his adversary? I think Wayne will come back in a big way by next season. Also, why are we so sure that Patty is Kevin's most powerful adversary? Could his father be his adversary? Could Kevin need to be battling himself when he goes into this afterlife or purgatory or wherever he's going to? So sorry for the lengthy voicemail. My wife and I absolutely love the show and the blog. And y'all don't need to apologize for sick kids. If anything, it gives us time to let that episode soak in. And boy, did we need time to let it soak in this week. Thanks again, you guys. Peace.
Clint, you are the man, and I do not think that it is at all a coincidence that your last name is Church. So please, brother, keep preaching that this is the best show on television. And you said something that really struck with me, which is, I am tired of trying to tell people that this how much this show rocks. I'm tired of trying to defend it. I'm tired of people coming to me like, they don't get any answers. Like you said, Clint, if you're missing out on this show, I remember last season I said I cast shame on anybody that gave up on The Leftovers before the finale. I do. And you know what? I don't even want you to watch my show. I don't want it. I don't want you to do it because you don't deserve it. And I'm going to piss people off. And I'm sorry. And you know what? I'm not sorry. I don't care. I don't care that somebody gets pissed off. Yes, go watch Criminal Minds. Go watch NCIS. Go watch Dancing with the Stars. Go watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians. You don't deserve this show. You don't. It's prestige television. And the problem is our consumption, the mass consumption of television now is done in a binge-style format, and everybody wants it just given to them. They want it given. And it don't work like that. Not for good television. Breaking Bad didn't give it to you. Mad Men didn't just give it to you. Those shows, you have to engage with it. And that's why those shows had a smaller audience. Even Game of Thrones has a smaller audience. It's only 8 million people that watch it on a daily basis. Granted, that's enormous in comparison to The Leftovers, but it's still small. You have a show like The Walking Dead. Now, I've been ripping on The Walking Dead now for weeks, and I'm going to continue to do it because it deserves to be ripped. The Walking Dead has 14 million viewers on an average. 14 million. And it's quickly becoming a big, dumb show. It's losing its grip. It went down this really cool path in season 5. Really cool ideas. And then this season, they puked all over their shoes because they just decided we're going to try to be cool. We're going to try to be artsy. And it didn't work. It hasn't worked. And this season has been pretty pathetic so far. So I'm going to, again, I know this isn't a Walking Dead podcast, but the show, this season sucks. It sucks. It's going along the lines of like season 2 of The Walking Dead, which just sucked too. So I don't know. But either way, you don't deserve my show. And you're right, Clint, that there is more at play here. And they're not, Kevin is not dead. It's just not happening. And the show is telling you that. Again, the show has never lied to you. The show on the whole, has never said or never given you the opportunity to say, you're wrong, you're lying to it, or you're lying to me. It's never done that. The show has given you the clues, it's given you the ideas that there is more at play here than just Kevin drinking poison. Perhaps Kevin, let's even just say for the sake of argument that the poison that was made by Virgil isn't fully effective. Let's just say for the sake of argument, just because this guy made it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to work. But but more importantly, there are clues, like you said, Clint, that force you to accept the fact that there's more here. And that's why it's better than The Walking Dead, because all it does is just rely on sleight of hand for The Walking Dead. The same thing with Game of Thrones. It just relies on sleight of hand. But this show is telling you exactly what it is without you even realizing it. That's for The Leftovers meaning. Without you even realizing it, it's telling you, it's showing you all its cards. It's just that you, or not you, Clint, but the people that don't like this show, or the people that even like the show that aren't engaging with it, they're not smart enough to figure out the clues. And I'm not saying that I am. I'm not. I'm. Who am I? I'm a jabroni in my basement down in my studio that I customly built with my wife with a microphone in front of my face, and I speak to the black hole. What the hell do I know? But I will tell you that I engage with this show. And at least I come up with stuff and I try to figure out, just like you guys. And that's why we have this community. And I'm sorry, I've gone on a big, big rant here, big diatribe. And I don't mean to do that. And I don't mean to preach to you. And I don't mean to belittle anybody. I'm just telling you that the people, and now I'm going to continue to belittle people. The people that watch this show, that don't like it, that don't get it, go back to your CSI. Go back to your NCIS Cyber and NCIS Miami and NCIS LA and NCIS fucking Puerto Rico or goddamn Toledo, wherever the hell the NCISs are, please go. Go, go, go. Get out of my face. Get out of my bubble. Get out of my podcast. Get out of the Leftovers bubble. Don't watch HBO. Don't watch Damon Lindelof. Don't even watch Lost. I don't want you to sully that experience either. You don't deserve it. I'm sorry. You suck. And I'm gonna hurt people by saying that, but I don't care. I don't care because they don't deserve the show. We, the collective we, the people that listen to this podcast, that engage with the show, that listen to other podcasts like Jay and Jack and Following the Leftovers by Bald Move and The Guilty Remnant and The Daily Review and everybody else that has podcasts about this show, How to Watch TV, all of you guys are all great and you want to learn more. This show isn't about just, it's not popcorn viewing, you know? It's not a Michael Bay movie. This is an old school. This is a school that embraces old school Twin Peaks ideas, but puts a modern spin on it. And you can have all that crap. You can have the Keeping Up with the Kardashians, the Dancing with the Stars, the Skating with the Stars, and the goddamn Voice and American Idol, and where you can just turn your brain off and watch it. And that is for some people. And there is nothing wrong with that, by the way. There are times, like, I watched The Gilmore Girls with my wife, and I loved The Gilmore Girls. I watched Parks and Rec, and I did that because I needed to turn my brain off for a little bit. I needed to just laugh. I needed to experience something other than The Leftovers or Outlander or Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul. Those shows, they require a lot of you as a viewer, especially the Leftovers. I mean, God, geez, how much does that require of you? So there is time to just turn your brain off. And that's what The Gilmore Girls is for. That's what Parks and Rec is for. The Leftovers is not that. And stop complaining to me, for those people, that this show isn't that. It's not meant to be. And you're not meant to watch it. So that's that. I know. I just went off on like a 10-minute rant. I'm sorry, guys. I just feel really passionate about that. All right, next call.
Hey, fellow lefties. Your one and only Missy here again. And to keep things on a professional level, WTF. Did you all see how many WTFs and holy shits were on social media Sunday night? And following into Monday, and still presently happening now, all week long, people are reacting. Oh, yes. And as did I. What on earth is going to happen next? This was by far the biggest cliffhanger we've experienced, and it's nuts. And all I'm going to say is that Lindelof has achieved his goal of making thousands of people say WTF and holy shit on a Sunday. I have a ton of thoughts and theories to share about this whole episode, but instead, I decided to jot it down and present it on the blog. I have a feeling that we're going to be seeing more of the Guilty Remnant, and so my article is titled The GR in Kevin's World. Please come check it out. And you know where to find us, on the Living Reminders website, of course, thelivingreminders.com. Hit the blog button and read all of our awesome contributions that we have to share with the Leftovers world. Also, I want to mention that Chris Hartwell, one of our contributors on the blog, is from The Heartbeat on YouTube, and he just released his review on Sunday's episode. And let me just say, he's fantastic. The way that he describes his reactions and thoughts, he's so freaking smart. And so you got to check him out, Chris Hartwell on YouTube. His links to the episodes are always on the blog. Mary and Blake, always a pleasure hanging out with you guys. And hang on, I'm having a flashback right now of the end of the episode. What the?
Oh, Missy, you are the best. You are the best. And yes, Chris Hartwell is very smart. That's why we have him on the blog. You know that. Everybody should know that. He is amazing. Please go check out his work on the blog, the video reviews for the Living Reminders blog, obviously. Great, great stuff. And he was a new addition just a few weeks ago, and he just rocks. So please go check them out. And his latest video was beautiful. And it's much smarter than this podcast. Much, much smarter. Well, I'll put it like that. We'll probably just go to him and leave us from now on. And you probably deserve that, because all I do is a rant about people. So that is that for the phone calls. All right, everybody, thank you for those calls. We love everything you have to say, as always. But now, my love, Brian, I think we should take... Well, wow, that came out really weird. My love, I think it's time for Brian to take it away. Brian is not my love. You are. Brian, take it away.
Mary and Blake, it's Brian Davids from the Film Schlubs podcast. I am still destroyed by this episode 2 days later. I literally paced around my house all night and couldn't fall asleep until 3 a.m. or so. A few weeks back, I interviewed the writer of this episode, Patrick Somerville. So after the episode, I emailed him and said that I needed therapy because of it. Of course, he was flattered by this thought. So Virgil wants us to think that adversaries are there to ruin the lives of their living counterparts, something that his adversary did to him. Virgil implied that adversaries will do everything possible to prevent their living counterpart from doing battle. However, Patty seemed willing to do battle, even though she has shown a complete willingness to protect Kevin. At times, we thought she was there to haunt or annoy him, which could be partially true, but there's mostly concern on her part. And given that Virgil didn't hold up his end of the bargain, we can't really believe his take on adversaries and battles in the other place. Was Virgil actually freeing himself here? This is now the second character with an ability to foresee things that's killed themselves in front of Kevin. Remember, Patty is a character who told Lori pre-departure that something bad was about to happen. Regarding Patty and her protective ways, in 206, she got mad at Kevin for telling Nora about her. Did she know that the events of episode 207 would play out like they did? Patty kept telling Kevin about the hard day he would have, so she seems to know what's coming, at least to an extent. She even blocked his access to the handcuff key, which is another sign of her looking out for him. Looking back, she warned him not to get in John's truck in episode 204. Right before that, she also told him where his phone was, so he didn't get in trouble for that either. Virgil speculates that Patty may have intervened with his suicide attempt in episode 202, as he called her a most powerful adversary. But again, we can't exactly rely on Virgil's word at this point, since he's had his own agenda in mind from the start. Of course, Patty intervenes to stop Kevin from drinking the poison, albeit unsuccessfully. In 204, when Patty told Kevin that he tried to commit suicide, she left out the part where he saw Virgil first. Did Patty withhold that information to protect Kevin from going back there again? I think so. The problem is, if she's so concerned about Kevin, why is she driving him to the point of suicide? Why not just leave him alone if you do care about him? Just guide him when needed. Now onto some random observations. Thinking back to the convenience store scene, Virgil told Nora, "I'm sorry for your loss," after buying a pack of cigarettes for Nora, which he called a gift to her boyfriend. Virgil likely picked up on the fact that Nora lost her family, just like he did with Kevin and his adversary, but the scene takes on a whole new meaning in light of what's happened in episode 207. We finally learn why John hates Miracle and its miracle workers. He associates them all with Virgil, who claimed that his adversary instructed him to do such terrible things to John as a child. It sounds like John is his son after all, so yay for me for actually connecting on that. However, I said from day one that there's something about John that will garner sympathy, and that's exactly the case since he's a victim of sexual abuse. John mentioned in episode 1 how he didn't try hard enough regarding the attempted murder of Virgil. But if Virgil's adversary battle in Rebirth is true, that would explain his miraculous survival from multiple gunshots. Bad Jill popped up again. It correlates yet again with a maternal figure walking out on her. This time it was Nora. Of course, Laurie returns in the same episode to make matters more difficult for her. However, I think they'll work it out. I bet Jill reveals that she retaped the letter that Tommy left her. At the locksmith, Patty kept saying it's a duck when the son was quizzing his father in Russian. There's that Russia reference we've been waiting for. For what it's worth, Patty called Kevin a lucky duck when he was with John en route to see Isaac. I'm not sure what you should do with that information, but given the kind of show that this is, it's worth filing away. And finally, what happens with Kevin? Well, we saw a bird come back to life in the Forest of Miracle. We'll see the same with Kevin Garvey. Miracle is special, and everybody knows it but John. Evie's plan is still intact, even with Virgil gone, as this story is all about opening up the special town to everyone, something Matt Jameson will ensure as he leads the encampment folk over that bridge. Evie will come back just in time for the win. You guys can find more of me, Brian Davids, on Twitter at BDF331, as well as the Film Schlubs podcast and the Living Reminders blog. As always, thank you to Mary and Blake and to you, the audience, for listening.
All right, Brian, thank you so much. Excellent thoughts, as always, every week. Be sure you remember you can catch him on filmschlubs.com. And now, my darling, I think it is time for the ever-famous Tweet of the Week. This week's Tweet of the Week is from Denise Stewart. She says, seriously, if that's for real about Kevin, how can I watch this anymore? For once, I'm actually speechless. And by the way, I'm going to miss those pants. That's all I'm going to say. So, Denise Stewart, congratulations on being this week's Tweet of the Week. As you probably already well know, that if you, by getting the Tweet of the Week, you get a $20 gift card to the Tag Your It Etsy shop. Go to www.tagyourit.biz as they sponsor the Tweet of the Week, and you'll be able to get anything you want from the Tag Your It Etsy shop. So again, congratulations, Denise, on being this week's Tweet of the Week.
Sudden Theory of the Week time.
Yes, it is. My love, did you hold anything back? Did you hold
one
morsel back for the Sudden Theory of the Week?
Ever. No.
No, of course not.
I'm excited to see Dirty Santa.
All right. By the way, him being a success story for Virgil, I mean, what does that say about Virgil's methods? This guy's on a pillow. He's Dirty Santa. and he's sending mail to David Burton over in Australia, which...
Hey.
I don't know. And he's getting bacon and eggs from Michael. That's all I'm going to say. It's not, and it makes you wonder why Kevin went through with it. Anyway, my sudden theory of the week is this. Virgil killed Kevin because he knew what it was like to have, again, I'm going to use the Dexter phrase here, a dark passenger. He admitted it himself that he had a passenger that made him do terrible things. So there are a couple of things at play here. One, Virgil probably thought that Kevin has something to do with the girl's disappearance. Now, I don't know if he thinks that Kevin is directly related to the girl's disappearance or that something Kevin did, but he knew that Kevin was in the woods when the girls disappeared. He saw Kevin run into the woods. He knew it. So he thinks that Kevin got rid of the girls somehow, or he's at least involved in it. And he knew that Kevin was there. So, two, Virgil killed himself because he didn't want any transference of Patty to him. He's already had a dark passenger. He already knows what it's like. And he doesn't want Patty to cling to him the way that she clings.
Oh my God, like that movie. What's that scary movie? The scary movie.
Oh, the time.
No, I'm talking about the scary movie where it's like, it's very simply shot. We saw it in the movie theater on Halloween.
Oh, Paranormal Activity.
Yeah, it's like Paranormal Activity. Remember how it left one woman and then it went to her sister?
That's right. Oh, that's right. They did the whole thing.
I'm getting tingles.
Oh, wow. That's a great theory. That's a great idea. Remember, Virgil could feel Patty. So he didn't want Patty to be transferred. If he could feel Patty, that means Patty's presence in Kevin's life is a major one. Like it's almost like a Toby-esque kind of thing from Paranormal Activity, right? So why did he kill Kevin? Well, why did he kill himself? So he didn't want the transference, and he could no longer live with the guilt of what happened to John and possibly Michael. And nor did he want to get caught for Kevin's murder. But here's the thing. What Virgil and Michael were talking about was not only the plan of what Virgil was going to do, but Virgil tells Michael, I'm going to leave it up to you to save Kevin. And we're going to see if this town is as special as it really is.
Fly like a bird.
And now I'm not buying this whole bury him thing. I'm not buying it because it's too neat.
Bury a bird and then make a wish that he comes back to life. The
correct.
Bird was to make a wish.
Yeah, correct. But what I'm saying is people are saying they're going to bury Kevin the way they buried birds so that Kevin comes back to life, right? I'm not buying it because it's too neat.
I would just bury a bird. The bird burying, and then you make a wish when you let the bird go. It's not about burying Kevin. It's about burying the bird. There's tons of birds outside Virgil's house.
Okay, so now that does make sense.
Just bury another
bit.
Bird. Just hide Kevin for a little while. Mm-hmm. Bury a bird, make a wish. 3 days later, Kevin's alive.
Okay, that does make sense. I like that idea. I'd rather accept that than burying Kevin in the ground and having him wake up.
I think he just needs to hide him because he's going to start to
smell. You're seeing a lot of rebirth in this whole thing. Virgil saying, I was reborn after I killed my dark passenger. I was reborn. I did everything. My life changed. You're seeing David Burton die and come back in Australia. You're seeing Kevin's dad come out of the mental institution, be reborn as a new person, talking about how the world ended and I could cry about it. Or I could make a whole new world.
And possibly Mary.
And Mary possibly waking up. So we're seeing this whole idea of rebirth. I mean, going even further, Kevin and Nora going to Miracle to have a new life. All about rebirth. So there's no way Kevin is going to die. It's about, and Michael somehow, it's up to him and Virgil would leave it up to him to bring Kevin back. That was the whole plan. And that's why Michael didn't want to do it. Because he's not sure if he can.
Unless Damon decides to pull a George R.R. Martin and say, oh, you like this character?
He's going to die. And here's another thing about that, too. There's no way they're going to kill Kevin right now. First of all, because he's the main character. But secondly, because his arc is not complete. His story is not complete. Think about what he's gone through. He's gone from being a police chief to living in Mapleton, having the problems with the GR, having his family fall apart, getting a new family, that family starting to fall apart, getting saddled with Patty, and then he dies.
I didn't feel like Ned Stark's arc was complete either.
But that was shock value. That was meant to push the story forward for the rest of Game of Thrones. By the way, spoiler alert, by the way.
Whatever.
Just saying that.
This was like 6 years ago.
So yeah, if you haven't seen it by now, that's your problem. I don't think they're going to do that with Kevin because there's too much riding on Kevin.
I just laughed like Chucky the Clown.
Wait, who?
I don't know. What's that clown from The Simpsons?
Krusty.
Krusty.
Chucky
the
Clown.
Did you hear me?
Maryism.
Did you hear me? That was really scary.
Oh, God. You know, we really do need that sound for Maryism shit. Here we go. Maryism. There we go. So I don't think that they're killing Kevin. And the great thing is, again, I'm going to reiterate this point. They're not they're not teasing the audience. They're not throwing in their faces. They're not being disingenuous with this entire thing. And Damon Lindelof himself made fun of The Walking Dead in a lot of ways, because the author, the showrunner, Scott Gimple, after The Walking Dead, after a certain character dies, put out a statement saying, hey, we're going to see this character again in certain ways, in different circumstances. And Damon Lindelof copied his statement almost word for word when he says, you will see Kevin, or parts of Kevin, possibly memories of Kevin, Kevin's jogging pants, maybe another character named Kevin, an adolescent game entitled 7 Minutes in Kevin, and or, but not necessarily literally, the actual Kevin again and soon. Hashtag this character's name lives. So I thought that was awesome. Thank you, Damon Lindelof.
Oh, Damon.
You are a genius.
So good.
Well, I think...
No, you have one more. I see your sudden theory, which is epic.
That's right.
That's amazing.
You like this, right? I'm having a twofa today, because I was that inspired by this episode. The GR, they're going to Miracle. They're totally going to Miracle.
Road trip.
They're totally going to Miracle, because now they found out about these departures. Maybe people think that Kevin's departed, or that Evie's departed. The Guilty Remnant are going straight there because of that, number one. But because, number two, Tommy is with... you. Put the Garrett freaking T on this. Tommy is with the GR, and he knows that Lori is down there.
Well, he knows, hey, I got family in Miracle. Mm-hmm. I can get in that park.
That's right, because he has the name. He can get in the park. So I'm telling you, the GR are going to Miracle. That's going to be that. And
oh my God, I hope they get road snacks.
Oh, by the way, I just wanted to play this sound.
Bam! Just like that. A winner! Yes, he's with Meg.
Because he's with Meg. We see this in the preview. I'm sorry if we spoiled that for you. He's with Meg. And then, number this too. Bam! Just like that. A winner! The hugs were fake. We knew that the hugs were fake, because now Lori has told Kevin that the hugs were, in fact, fake. So I just want to say that I'm pretty much the smartest man on the planet. I'm basically, that's me. Just so we're all clear. And that, I think, is the longest sudden theory segment of the week that we've ever had. So let's close that out. Please hang up and try again. My love, final thoughts. What do you got, any?
It was amazing. My favorite episode of this season so far.
That's right. And I feel like this show, again, another amazing, amazing entry into this season. It is quickly becoming, again, one of the best seasons of television I've ever seen, quickly becoming that. And the way that they're writing this season, it's not like cliffhanger after cliffhanger after cliffhanger. It's like they're slowly giving you everything. It seems as though that every single episode has been planned out. It seems that everything has been written to the T, so that you're getting information, but dribs and drabs. And then each time you get something, another question comes up, which reminds me of one certain show where the mother says, for every answer, 10 more questions come up. And we all know what that show is.
We have to go back, Kate.
Every answer leads to another question. And that is the beauty that this show has done. It leaves you with wanting more. This is a perfect season to binge, right? And that they haven't been disingenuous with each cliffhanger, or they haven't been disingenuous with each conclusion of the episode. It's just brought you along. Unlike certain shows, i.e. The Walking Dead, i.e. The Game of Thrones, this show has just handled everything so much better than this show, than those shows. And it's in fact the best show on television. There's just no way around it. I'm putting the stamp of approval on this one. I'm going to the mattresses. I'm co-signing. Best show on television right now.
Yes.
Best show. That's that. All right, let's close out the show. You ready, my love?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
I don't know if you've noticed, but my child has stopped crying. It's amazing. So I hope you've enjoyed this last half of the show.
Supermom.
Without her little cooing. Anyway, we want to continue this conversation. Do you think Kevin is dead? What do you think is going to happen with Patty? Let's keep this going. Reach out to us on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. Our handles are all the same. It is Living Reminders.
And if the social media ain't enough for you, you can always reach us at livingreminders@gmail.com.
Head on over to thelivingreminders.com if you want to leave a super long message that is bigger than 140 characters. Join the conversation there.
And if you, while you're at the website, you can also take a look at this little button that says support on the top right-hand corner of the page. There you can find a whole bunch of different ways to support the Living Reminders. Either that's through Patreon or through PayPal. You can donate a dollar or two every month or whatever. But the most important thing you can do for us is to tell a friend that we exist. Please, 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 please. I cannot reiterate this enough. Tell a friend that we exist, that this show exists. We are a boutique podcast. This is a boutique show.
Boutique.
You like that, right? I feel like a famous and like, you know, or like... important when I say boutique, high class even. Tell them that we exist, and that way we can just get the recognition that this show and this podcast deserves if we provide a good value for you as it relates to the show The Leftovers.
Another way that you can let people know is head on over to iTunes and leave us a rating or a review. We actually have 73 ratings right now. 53 of those are written reviews. So awesome.
How many reviews have we got now?
53 are written.
And how many total?
73 total.
Wow, excellent.
You guys are amazing. I just wanted to read one of them, which says, it's from Stephanie W651, says, excellent podcast, a really engaging and insightful podcast, lots of in-depth with the discussion of the show, and extra points for being Lost fans, too.
Hi-yo.
Woohoo! So thank you very much. Head on over to iTunes to leave your own rating and review.
That's right. And last thing we want you to do is check out the Living Reminders blog. Go to thelivingreminders.com, hit the little tab that says blog, and you'll be able to find all great articles there, including one by me, as a matter of fact, where I wrote that ratings suck and that The Leftovers will never, that's right, never be canceled. It will not happen. Oh, you know what? We forgot to make an important announcement.
What?
I'm just going to let the music run out here. Are you ready for this?
Okay.
An important announcement is that we will be, for those of you who stuck around, you're going to get a nice little treat.
What?
Last year, we did a megacast.
Oh, I know what this is.
That's right. I know you know what this is. Last year, we did a megacast. And the megacast consisted of us and the Guilty Remnant podcast coming together for one giant podcast.
Woo!
To talk about all, it was all listener feedback driven, right? This year, we're not going to have a megacast. It's canceled. Not going to happen. That's, want to know why? Because this year we're having a freaking ultracast. That's right, an ultracast. We, the Guilty Remnant, and Jay and Jack are going to have one giant podcast together.
One big leftovers fest.
One leftovers love fest.
It's like
no wishing cups
Coachella,
involved.
But about the leftovers.
So
patchouli,
we're gonna have,
tents.
No tents, no patchouli. I don't want people like Miracle outside
Headbands.
Of Miracle. The outer Miracle people showing up in front of our studio. I don't want that. We're going to have an ultracast, all of us together, and it's going to be all listener driven. So this will happen after the finale so we can all talk about what happens in this show. So an ultracast with three amazing podcasts. Us,
amazing.
The Guilty Remnant, and Jay and Jack. So we're all going to get together. I'm thinking maybe a week or two outside or after the finale. That's our big announcement. Thank you for sticking around. You got an extra treat for sticking through the closeout of the show. You like that?
Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Mary Larson.
My name's Blake.
And we are still here.